Coming up, as Pope Francis issues a global moral challenge on the environment, Kim Lawton travels to South Louisiana, where faith-based activists are trying to help communities threatened by climate change. Also, for some, the Pope's encyclical recalls the controversy surrounding liberation theology. Fred DeSam Lazaro reports from Nicaragua.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Faith groups across the spectrum are expressing grief and outrage in the wake of the deadly shooting at an historic black church in Charleston, South Carolina. Nine were killed at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, including the pastor, South Carolina State Senator Clemente Pinckney. Police arrested a 21-year-old white man who reportedly said he wanted to start a race war. President Obama expressed his sadness, and many religious leaders are renewing their call for the nation to confront ongoing issues of racism and gun violence. In an historic letter addressed to every person living on this planet, Pope Francis this week called for urgent action to stop the unprecedented destruction of the earth, which he said is beginning to look more and more like an immense pile of filth. He said care for creation and care for the poor are morally intertwined. The Pope's highly anticipated encyclical or teaching document was released Thursday at a Vatican news conference. In it, Francis criticized huge consumption in wealthy countries, which he said has repercussions on the poorest areas of the world. He called climate change one of the principal challenges facing humanity and said there's scientific consensus that it's largely the result of human activities. The Pope timed his statement to precede a United Nations gathering this fall that will try to produce an international agreement for reducing climate change. Some critics accuse Francis of being too political and relying too much on one particular scientific view, but others, including many faith groups, praised him for injecting a moral dimension into the environmental debate. In Washington, representatives of the U.S. Catholic bishops welcomed the document.
I think we'll find that there really is an invitation. It's an invitation to dialogue, but not a weak invitation. There's an urgency in calling for that dialogue.
We'll have more on this coming up. Religious conservatives have begun flexing their political muscle for the 2016 elections at the Faith and Freedom Coalition's annual Road to Majority conference in Washington this week. A parade of GOP presidential candidates tried to make their case to potential supporters.
We will have a president that understands and believes that the government is not meant to replace moms and dads. It is meant to empower them. And it is not meant to marginalize churches and synagogues. It is meant to protect them and their constitutional right.
The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to a small Arizona church in a dispute over church signs. The Good News Community Church of Gilbert, Arizona, had contested a town ordinance limiting the size and duration of the church's roadside signs, but not others, including political or real estate signs. The Supreme Court unanimously said such rules violated the church's freedom of speech. Many religious freedom groups had opposed the ordinance, as had the Obama administration. The Southern Baptist Convention held its annual meeting in Columbus, Ohio this week, and the Supreme Court's upcoming decision on same-sex marriage was a major focus. Church leaders reaffirmed their opposition to gay marriage and distributed a guide about potential legal problems churches might face involving issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. The meeting came amid news of record declines among Southern Baptists, the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. Lifeway Christian Resources said Southern Baptist churches lost more than 200,000 members last year, the biggest drop in more than 130 years. In Minnesota, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of St. Paul in Minneapolis and his top aide resigned just days after their diocese was criminally charged with failing to protect children from a sexually abusive priest. Archbishop John Nienstedt said he was resigning to avoid being a distraction, although he said he had a clear conscience. For years, he's faced heavy criticism over his handling of a priest who was eventually sentenced to prison for sex crimes against children. In Israel, a Roman Catholic church, popular among tourists, was heavily damaged by fire in a possible arson attack. The Church of Loaves and Fishes rests atop the site where tradition says Jesus miraculously fed thousands of people. Church officials have called on the Israeli government to do more to promote religious tolerance and bring those responsible to justice. Humanitarian groups marked this week's World Refugee Day with growing alarm about the rising number of people displaced by conflict. According to the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, almost 60 million people were forced from their homes by fighting last year, the largest number since the UN began counting in the early 1950s. The most refugees were from Syria, where almost half the pre-war population has been displaced. Now, a special report. With Pope Francis making a strong case for the connection between the environment and the poor and vulnerable, Kim Lawton traveled to South Louisiana, where many faith-based activists are trying to help communities affected by climate change.
Deep in the bayous of South Louisiana, residents have little doubt about the impact of climate change.
We live here, so we see it happening. We see the land sinking, sea level rise. We see it all.
Teresa Dardar is part of a small Native American fishing community whose families have been here for generations. On a boat ride down the bayou, she shows me where her grandfather lived.
This used to be full of trees, and they used to have a lot of cattle here.
Today, water has overtaken much of the marshland, and little can grow here. The area is littered with what Dardar calls ghost trees.
Ghost trees are skeletons. Everything around here is dead.
Most scientists who study this area say changes in climate fueled by growing amounts of carbon emissions have led to rising sea levels. That has accelerated coastal erosion and generated more severe flooding. And that in turn has deposited salt and other toxins that are killing vegetation and water life. Extracting oil has further weakened the marshes. Many areas have been left with little protection from storm surges. And with every storm, more land disappears. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, since 1932, South Louisiana has lost an area of coastal wetlands as large as the state of Delaware, and it continues to lose the equivalent of one football field of coast every hour.
It's a wonderful, beautiful place, but it's unfortunately going underwater.
Christina Peterson is a Presbyterian pastor, professor of environmental planning at the University of New Orleans, and coordinator of the Interfaith Wetlands Theological Project. She says these environmental threats have already displaced many in vulnerable Native American and Cajun communities.
As folks are forced out because homes keep receiving water or they can no longer get to their homes because of the water, they are forced to move to other locations, which then breaks that whole network that is so close-knit.
People of faith across the spectrum have been increasingly making climate change a top priority. Many say the teachings of their faith inform their concern for the environment. Pope Francis emphasizes the impact of environmental changes on poor and vulnerable people and is issuing a twofold moral challenge: care for creation and care for those in need.
How do we respond to the needs of the poor, and how do we exercise both dominion and stewardship over creation? How do we keep those in a balance for the good of all, recognizing that the poor right now are already being affected?
Many environmental activists are thrilled to have the support of this popular pope. Lonnie Ellis is a lay Franciscan and associate director of Catholic Climate Covenant.
He's giving moral guidance, not scientific guidance, not political advice, but moral guidance of how we should all think about our sisters and brothers who are vulnerable on this issue.
But there is also pushback, particularly from some conservative Catholics who believe concerns about climate change are overblown. Mark Morano publishes Climate Depot, a website that is skeptical of many warnings about global warming.
Catholics in America and around the world might be puzzled with all the other issues going on, whether it's persecution of Christians, whether it's severe poverty issues, whether it's crisis in faith, peace shortages, wars, conflicts. Why is the Vatican spending so much capital on global warming? That's going to be a head-scratcher.
In South Louisiana, Île de Jean-Charles is considered one of the places at the most risk from environmental issues. 82-year-old Catholic priest Father Rock Nockin was born here and lives in his family home. It was built on 2-foot-high blocks in the 1950s. After flooding from Hurricane Juan in 1985, Nockin went through the very costly process of raising the house on 8-foot blocks. But then in 2002, with Hurricane Lily, the house flooded again.
When I made an arrangement to raise it up to the present level, 11 feet up in the air.
From his 11-foot-high deck, Nockin sees dramatic changes in the surroundings.
As you look now, you see water all over the place. When I was small, it was all good trapping land. People would ask me many times, do you plan to stay here? And I say, well, yes, where are you going to go?
President, it won't be a choice.
Albert Nockin is tribal chief of the area. He says in the last 20 years, his community has diminished by more than half.
I mean, whether they want to or not, they're gone. The one that's living there are just the hardcore, and plus they have a home to live in. The others mostly lost their homes during the hurricanes.
Christina Peterson says her concern for the environment comes directly from her faith.
God takes extreme pleasure in what there is around us in creation. And when we destroy it, I can't imagine the pain that that causes God.
Peterson has been very involved with traditional Bayou communities here. She works for policies that will address the damage human activities do to the coastal wetlands. She believes restoration is possible in many areas.
It's going to take the political and religious will of the people to say, this is important. We need to save this place, not only for the people, for the environment, but for God's creation.
But Peterson says it's already too late for some places. She and Chief Elbert are lobbying for money and land to relocate his entire community further inland.
It's cheaper to put a new community together than it is to try to restore it. Just give us that community that we need, and from there we should be able to make it on our own.
Bishop Shelton Fobbs says his diocese of Houma-Thibodaux is doing what it can to provide practical and spiritual help.
Church is still there, even though there are people who may be moving north. The church is there to help those who remain, and those who move, the church is also present where they are going.
Since 2005, Catholic Charities in the diocese has spent $7.5 million helping people deal with the crisis.
We're in the business of helping people try to stay in their communities for as long as they can.
Gorman says it's part of their biblical mandate.
We call it the Matthew 25 program, after the passage from Matthew, where you were called on to shelter the homeless, feed the hungry, care for the sick.
Like Pope Francis, Gorman asserts that another way to help the needy is to push for changes at the individual and policy levels.
I think we have to be advocates, we have to practice individual responsibility, and we have to organize and educate.
But this makes some Catholics uncomfortable. Mark Morano is part of a coalition that went to Rome in April, urging the Vatican not to rely only on scientists who take what they call an alarmist extremist position on climate change.
None of the predictions, the dire predictions they've made so far are coming true. They're failing to come true. And this is one of the things that the Pope is not hearing. He's only hearing one view. Carbon-based energy development is the best friend for poor people and would give them the best chance at life.
Morano is also concerned about the Vatican being too closely tied to the United Nations climate agenda.
On many issues from abortion, euthanasia, overpopulation concerns, there's going to be massive conflicts with Catholic teachings. And I think the Pope has got to, and the Vatican has to think this through better.
The church works with people who have similar agendas for specific issues. So just because the church has an observer at the UN doesn't mean that the Vatican's endorsing everything the UN does.
Gorman tells skeptics the church must be prudent in addressing climate change.
You can disagree all you want, but you've seen the effects. And we have a moral obligation first to respond to the immediate needs of people. But we also, with the virtue of prudence, have an obligation to assume that this is happening and therefore take steps to deal with it.
Some Catholics hope Francis's strong statement on climate change will ultimately strengthen the church.
I think coming at it with a hopeful, faithful message is starting new kinds of conversations that is moving past some of our deadlock that we've had before.
I think lifting it up at this time has challenged me to also say, in what ways am I taking creation for granted? In what ways am I making assumptions about the environment or not really knowing what my actions are completely doing?
Here in the Bayous, there's hope the statement will lead to tangible change.
Maybe people will listen to him. If nothing is reversed, I see a lot of damage to Mother Earth. A lot of damage.
I'm Kim Lawton in South Louisiana.
Pope Francis's encyclical linking protecting the environment with helping the poor recalls for some the controversial liberation theology movement of a generation ago. It was strong, particularly in Central and South America, and on a recent trip to Nicaragua, Fred DeSam Lazaro spoke with some of the veterans of that country's struggles.
There was a time when this ballad could only be performed clandestinely in Nicaragua and even neighboring countries. It was part of a mass banned by church leaders and frowned upon by government authorities. In this traditional Catholic region, embroiled in one of the Cold War's last proxy battles, it's not hard to see how it could be provocative. Christ is addressed as comrade, for example.
All the words, the expressions used were used in everyday life. This mass was so popular because it was transparent.
Carlos Mejia wrote this mass in 1975, dedicated to campesinos or peasant farmers. He still performs selections from it in his family's restaurant in Nicaragua's capital, Managua.
La misa.
This campesina mass was a departure from the traditional mass, where you would be seated in the church and the faithful, they look up to God and they pray, God have pity on us. And we started having people say, God show solidarity with us. There was no longer that distance. This was a new concept.
Mejia was part of a movement across Latin America that became known as liberation theology. Its proponents pledged to work for the poor against what they saw as an oppressive ruling class. It was inspired by the Second Vatican Council, the historic gathering called in 1962 by Pope John XXIII to bring the church closer to the faithful. Among Vatican II's most symbolic changes, priests who historically faced the altar began facing the congregation. And the liturgy, celebrated for centuries in Latin, was simplified. It's now conducted in the local language.
Pope John XXIII felt that things were stagnated in the church, that we needed fresh air. He said we must open up the windows and let fresh air come into our church to revitalize it.
Father Miguel Descoto Brockman, a priest from the Marinole Order, brought his belief in liberation theology to the context of Nicaragua's politics and its civil war. He joined the leftist Sandinista government that overthrew the right-wing dictatorship in 1979. He became Nicaragua's foreign minister.
The message of Jesus was 100% political. That's why he's not only anti-imperialist, he's revolutionary.
Representing a Soviet-backed government fighting a civil war against the U.S.-backed Contra rebels, Brockman was a strident critic of what he called U.S. imperialism. But his work ran afoul of a directive from Pope John Paul II that clergy not hold political office. In 1985, Brockman was suspended from the priesthood for defying the order. He remains unapologetic.
I have to obey, but God first. That's what you call the primacy of conscience. And Vatican II clearly establishes the primacy of conscience again. But John Paul II had a pre-Vatican II mentality. It's not his fault. He was Polish. And Poland was the Catholic country where the ideas of Vatican II least penetrated.
Brockman, who is 83 now, appealed his suspension to Pope Francis, saying he wanted to say Mass once more before he dies. The petition was approved by a Vatican that he says is being transformed.
The Church is more attuned to Jesus. That's the only thing that matters.
Under Francis, you mean?
Under Francis.
Another signal Brockman and others point to is the Pope's decision to open the way to beatify Oscar Romero, the archbishop in neighboring El Salvador, who was assassinated in 1980 while saying Mass. Romero was a critic of the growing social and economic disparities and political repression in the region. Many analysts think his beatification was delayed under Francis's predecessors because of Romero's perceived sympathy for the liberation theologians. But the Archbishop of Managua, who was appointed by Pope Francis, doesn't view these developments as an endorsement of the liberation theology dissidents.
It has to do with the Pope being a Latin American. He's well aware of the path of the Church across this region, and he knows the problems of Latin America.
Archbishop Brenes rejects the allegation by liberation theology exponents that the Church has historically sided with the moneyed and powerful interests at the expense of the poor.
That is a falsehood. The Church in Latin America and Nicaragua has always been serving and on the side of the poor, and that's why it is strong. Liberation theology never actually gained much momentum here because people here are very faithful and allied with the Church.
Theology professor Michelle Nagles has a different explanation.
The search for God is a very personal pursuit.
She says liberation theology was not a movement to explore individual and personal spirituality, but rather a collective pursuit, mixing a political and religious agenda. It was a product of its time, she says.
Liberation theology had a basis in Marxism, which was very necessary and relevant at the time. But in socio-political terms, there were a lot of factors that were ignored or excluded, such as the environment or gender issues, for example.
There may be disagreement on whether or not the new Pope has affirmed their long-ago efforts, but the aging proponents of liberation theology say their ideals are far more closely aligned with the Pope today for the first time in a generation. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSam-Lazaro in Managua, Nicaragua.
Elizabeth Elliot died this week at the age of 88. She was a missionary and author, revered among many evangelical Christians for her ministry to an indigenous tribe in Ecuador that had killed her husband. She was also known for her radio program called Gateway to Joy. Finally, on our calendar this week, Muslims around the world began their Ramadan fast with the sighting of the new moon. During the month-long observance, Muslims who are able to do so are called upon to fast every day from dawn to sunset, and offer special prayers and gifts to the poor so as to become closer to God and neighbor. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. To our Muslim friends, Ramadan Mubarak. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from an ordination of Jesuit priests at Queen of All Saints Basilica in Chicago. They're part of the largest group of new Jesuit priests in the U.S. and Canada in more than 15 years.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.